Hello, is anybody here? Papi? Mama? Where is she? Anybody? I'm all alone. I'm by myself. And the microphone is on. And what shall I do? I don't know. Maybe I can do my own show. Hello, it is the Super Rica Show. I am here to entertain you all with song and dance. Hooray, hooray. It's my show, the Super Rica Show. And now, yes, thank you. Thank you for your applause. No, keep your seats. Thank you. Thank you. I would like to sing for you a song. One of my favorites.
Before Lord God made the sea and the land, he held all the stars in the palm of his hand, and they ran through his fingers like grains of sand. And one little star fell alone. Then the Lord God hunted through the wide night air for the little dark star.
I have trouble with those high notes.
Hi, it's Paul Dini, and, Super Rica.
See, Poppy?
Did you hear some dude?
What do you mean?
Like, there was some dude, like, kind of bellowing in here at the top of his lungs just a couple of minutes ago?
No, I hear the ice cream truck. I'm going out now. Bye.
Goodbye.
That was weird. I have something on here. Is somebody using my equipment?
I don't know. It could be. Maybe Super Rica was playing around with something. Usually Rashi is the mischievous one, but he's off with Misty right now. Misty's kind of taking care of a bit of a difficult situation, and she will join us again next week. But anyway, so it's just us gang in here, and I think this is a good excuse for us to answer some of those questions that have been piling up. So if you would kindly cue the music there, Ezra.
Questions from the fans.
All right. We're in with a nice, fresh pile of questions.
Oh, our old friend Electric V01 asks, if you were stuck on a desert island and could only have one complete cartoon series for eternity, what would it be?
Ooh.
Looney Tunes, of course.
Oh, yeah, that would be extensive.
Yeah, Looney Tunes, Merry Melodies. That would take in a lot of things. I would even go back to the old black and whites, and it would go up to the present day. In fact, that might even take in the new Looney Tunes series that's running on Cartoon Network, which I was just watching a few minutes ago. It's pretty funny. My old friends Spike Brandt and Tony Cervoni work on that show. We worked on Duck Dodgers. I guess, I don't know, if it was all-inclusive of the entire Looney Tune history and everything connected with those characters, I guess Duck Dodgers would be there as well as the new stuff. Mostly it's pretty good, you know, Looney Tunes. They're Merry Melodies.
Definitely.
There are a few stinkers here and there. I think the stinkiest effort of Looney Tunes was this. Not many people know this. There was actually a Saturday morning TV movie done in the 70s, a team-up between Daffy Duck, Porky Pig, and the Groovy Ghoulies. I would probably leave that one off the island. For one brief moment, Filmation Studios got control of the Looney Tunes.
Wow.
And so they teamed up with the Groovy Ghoulies and all the Looney Tunes, except for Bugs Bunny. He doesn't appear in it.
So do they all have the classical Filmation limited animation style?
You know what? I remember watching it when I was a kid, the one time they aired it, and I kept leaving the room and kind of shaking my head because it was pretty bad. It looked just about as bad as the opening title sequence of the Porky Pig show, and nothing looks that bad.
Wow.
You know, for a while, Porky Pig had his own show in syndication, and I guess they'd done some real crummy title animation in Korea or something. I don't know. It just didn't look good. I'm probably getting the facts wrong. I know that around that time, they took a bunch of the old black and white Porky Pig, some really great ones done by Bob Clampett and Freeling and Tashlin, and shipped them over to Korea to have them remade in color, where they would trace them in a really weird, bizarre process. It wasn't even as good as colorization. So sometimes, you know, I remember watching them, and there would be like a color Looney Tune that was actually animated in color, and it looked great. And then they would have, God, what was it? I remember the henpecked duck, I think, got that treatment. I'm not sure, but I think that was one of the ones that was kind of savaged. I remember seeing that around that time, although I can't honestly say if it was in black and white or was one of the redone ones. It was just terrible. So anyway, yeah, Looney Tune, yes, Electric says, as in complete Looney Tunes or Hanna-Barbera or Tex Avery or something. I guess, Tex Avery's MGM stuff is all great, but if I take the entire run of Looney Tunes, Merry Melodies, Tex is in there, some of his best earlier stuff.
I'd have to choose Beanie and Cecil.
Beanie and Cecil?
Yeah, all of the Beanie and Cecils have always made me laugh, no matter how silly they are.
Yeah, I mean, have you seen them lately?
Yeah, I actually have. I've been getting those collections that they've been putting out with the original puppeteering stuff.
Oh, right? Yeah.
And I love those.
That's good stuff. I loved Beanie and Cecil when I was a kid because it was, they had a whole merchandise line on it. And, you know, I thought Bob Clampett was like the coolest cartoonist ever because he had himself caricatured in his own title sequence.
Yeah.
And I got all the toys when I was a kid. I pestered my folks. And every Christmas there was like a talking Cecil or jumping DJ or something like
nice.
That. You know. And
I'd love to have one Beanie and Cecil toy.
That'd yeah, awesome. They had the Beanie Copter that when you pull a string and it would fly off your head. And
oh,
I had Cecil and my brother Bruce had a talking Beanie, like the Beanie doll. And we had those, and God, they were a lot of fun. Hanna-Barbera. I love Hanna-Barbera, the early stuff, but there comes a point where I got to cut it off. You know.
Oh yeah.
Huckleberry Hound, Yogi Bear. Snagglepuss, Quickdraw McGraw, all the characters, right? The Flintstones, right up until the Jetsons is my cutoff point. Because I got the Magilla Gorilla set recently, and it just, everything that was sort of fun and interesting and cool about old Huckleberry Hound and Mr. Jinx and Yogi Bear, by the time they got to Magilla Gorilla, it was just one more animal escaping from confinement. You know, it's like they were running down the list. Okay, we have a bear, we have an alligator.
Didn't they do the Hair Bear Bunch, too, or something like that?
Hair Bear Bunch, you know, that was like later in the 70s, but
yeah.
Magilla Gorilla was around 64, 65. Okay. If I remember correctly, it was like the absolute first was Rough and Ready, which I liked as a kid. I thought that was really cool because that was, and the characters spoke in this goofy, kind of cool, kind of cornball rhyme. Not all the time, but they made a lot of rhymes and puns, and when I was a kid, I thought it was real cute and real clever. And then came Huckleberry Hound, which was my all-time favorite show when I was a kid, because it was Huck, Yogi, and Mr. Jinx. And I loved them all. I loved Mr. Jinx, because even as a kid, I think that's when I first discovered what an asshole was. Well, not anatomically, but what a person who's an asshole is Mr. Jinx, because he's like ostensibly the friends.
Mm-hmm.
Well, he's the Mises' friend, and then he just treats them terribly. And, you know, I was going, like, Mr. Jinx is a jerk. And I think that's where I first heard the term asshole. Some other kid was describing Mr. Jinx as an asshole. And said, really? Like, on your bottom? And he's like, yeah. It's like,
I hate those Mises to pizza.
Oh, he's a total asshole. But he was funny. And, I love the way he talked, you know. Like, you know, he have this very pronounced way of elocution.
That was really good.
Just last week, we had some rats out in our barn, and we set some traps. And the first day, you know, first night, we got two of them. So I came in and told Misty, "It is my supreme delight to like inform you that Pixie and Dixie have she bit the dust." Or in other words, the Mises are in pieces. She just said, "Oh, go away. Just leave the room."
Well, it entertained me.
Yep. So, I don't know. It would be, again, it would be kind of a spotty run because, it's like Yogi Bear's A+ all the way. Huck's a solid A. Jinx's Pixie and Dixie are pretty much a solid A. Starts to slip a little bit, maybe with Snagglepuss. Snagglepuss I liked, actually, a lot more on Quickdraw McGraw. Interestingly, Snagglepuss was a villain and when he was first introduced. And he was a villainous kind of con man mountain lion. He was a nemesis of Quickdraw McGraw in a couple of cartoons.
Wow.
Because, you know, Quickdraw's a sheriff and he's out, you know, guarding flocks or, you know, stopping rustlers and things like that. And Snagglepuss was the local predator. And what was interesting was his voice was still the Bert Lahr voice of the Wizard of Oz.
Yeah, yeah.
But it had a little more heft to it. You know, like in those scenes where Bert Lahr is trying to be tough, you know, the Cowardly Lion's trying to be tough.
Put them up.
Yeah, it was a little more like that. And then when he became Snagglepuss, it was more mellifluous, a little more Heavens to Murgatroyd, a little more Bobby Moynihan on Saturday Night Live, if you saw that skit.
Yeah.
That was a great skit.
That was
Snagglepuss. A first great role in about 40 years.
Yeah.
But actually, he was colored differently. He was more of an orange color, and he didn't have the usual collar and cuffs. And the character design was really great on him. And I mean, he's still kind of recognizable, especially the voice. But I guess when they gave him his own feature, they kind of sweetened him up a little bit.
And they positioned him more into theatrics and exiting stage right or whatever.
Yeah, he's still goofy, you know, like an animal that escapes from captivity.
Like he's the Lucy of Hanna-Barbera cartoons, where he always wants to be on the stage or something.
Yeah, yeah, he's like, yeah. They made him kind of a frustrated thespian.
Yeah,
he wanted to be an actor and, you know, quote Shakespeare and stuff like that. He became more of like a ham actor instead of a ham stealer, I guess, or whatever it was he was stealing on Quick Draw show. Quick Draw McGraw, another great show. I love that. Augie Doggie and Snooper and Blabber and stuff like that. Those were great, you know, so there are about five really good shows. Huck, Yogi, Rough and Ready, Quick Draw, Flintstones, Jetsons, Johnny Quest, you know.
Oh, yeah.
But right about that point is like, once it got to around Wally Gator, it's sort of like, they kept him in the swamp, like in the title sequences where he's driving a boat around. I kind of like that, you know. Mm-hmm. But then he became one more animal to escape from confinement. Same with Magilla Gorilla. Same with, you know, a lot of them, you know. And then they had, you know, Breezily Bruin, a character no one remembers. Sneasley Seal and Breezily Bruin. It was like Yogi and Boo Boo, but at the North Pole. You know, they were it was a polar bear and a seal who you'd think would be eating each other, like Lippy and Hardy. They'd just be eating each other, you know.
So was that before or after Tennessee Tuxedo?
It was around the same time, you know. Sneasley and Breezily, it was Yogi at the North Pole. He was always trying to, it was a cold polar bear, and he was always trying to sneak into the local army base, you know, and get warm or something like that. But it was, you know, Yogi was like a, you know, a lovable con man. Breezily Bruin was just sort of a dope, you know. And that was the thing. The animals had come. The characters were kind of stupid. Magilla Gorilla sort of stupid. Squiddly Diddly. Again, you know, what else can escape from a zoo? Well, we've had every other animal escape. Let's do an aquarium, have an octopus escape. You know, and it's like, oh, okay. You know, whatever. And then I was just getting older at the time, but I just lost interest.
Emily and I have been having this conversation about the stupefying of cartoon characters over the years. Like, even such a character like Homer Simpson used to be smarter than he is now. And I think that's the flaw in The Simpsons at the moment.
Well, yeah, they've actually made jokes about that on the show, like show how he's gotten stupider over the years. But I think
variety episode.
What's that?
In the variety
episode. Oh, yeah.
Episode,
yeah.
They
say,
I think Homer's gotten dumber every year.
Yeah.
He's like, that's not a question.
Let's see. With Homer, I don't know. I guess it just gave them more story possibilities. They're going on their 500th episode. I think the 500th episode, talking about doing Snagglepuss, is going to air this season or it's coming up. Now they're talking about an all Simpsons network where you just watch the Simpsons all day.
At season 13.
Yeah, there came a point where Homer got too stupid, where it was like the plots were kind of recycled, you know. They were kind of like, here's this basic story that we've done before, now we're going to do kind of the same story again. But
also seems like they moved a lot faster. Like, it went three plots in one episode. You finished one plot in like the first 3 or 4 minutes, which led you into the story, and that led into another plot halfway through the episode.
Yeah, I mean, you know, there were some stories that were unbelievably tight in the early days, like like Bart gets hit by a car was a great story, because that had him being naughty, getting hit by Burns's car, and then the whole thing about Burns wants to fire Homer before he can sue him, and then if he does, it'll make him look bad, and then they get Dr. Nick to analyze Bart and make him all if I'm remembering correctly, and, you know, phony doctors and everything. Yeah. That was a really tight story, and it was all built around the central plot.
Yeah.
Now they'll have, you know, Lisa has a story, Marge has a story, comic book guy has a story, Chief Wiggum has a story in the same episode. And, yeah. And you know, you've got so many characters populating Springfield right now. Yeah, it's fun to do a Chief Wiggum episode. Yeah, it's fun to do a Professor Frink episode once in a while. But yeah, it's really about the family and everything. I actually, today I was looking at some of the old Tracy Ullman shorts online with The Simpsons.
And
those were really great. I mean, you know, all the like really great episodes were like the early Sideshow Bob episodes were pretty good. The early Krusty ones, just anything that involves the family that really, it was kind of, they were all kind of really just terrific. The there's one I really like, Bart After Dark, where he winds up the doorman at a burlesque house.
Oh yeah, that's right.
I just thought that was, it was just really a terrific concept and a very funny episode. There was another one where he goes to work for the mob. I like any story where Bart, you know, is like employed in some job that he clearly shouldn't be at. So the first one with Fat Tony was terrific. They were all pretty good. So, well, there's another one, you know, there's a good one to be marooned on a desert island with 500 episodes of The Simpsons. That's a big run right there.
Or even Batman the Animated Series, I'm sure, would be somebody's go-to pick for that.
Yep, not mine, but somebody complimented me on one of the scripts the other day, and I said, well, I don't know, did we do that episode? It's actually gotten to the point where I don't remember them anymore.
Oh, wow.
Well, and this one was something I'd written the story for, but actually Jerry Conway had written the script for. So,
oh, okay.
You know, I would do that occasionally. I'd just write a story, and then I either wouldn't have time to write it or else, you know, it would be like, well, it's not my turn in the rotation to take a script. So here's a story that I really want to see done. So let's give this to, you know,
nice.
one of our top writers. So it was fun working with Jerry. We also had Steve Gerber on the show. He was terrific to work with. Anyway, long trip down memory lane. We've got Static Keeling saying, really enjoy your work and podcast. Thank you. Thoughts on the new Star Wars Blu-rays? Extras alone seem to be a big hit. Yeah, you know, I haven't seen much of those. I saw all the footage that's on there years ago when I worked at Skywalker Ranch. You know, we just had tapes of the stuff lying around, so I got to see most of it up there. I was, when I saw the footage of Vader, you know, going, no, and saving Luke from the Emperor, you know, it didn't bother me that much because I always felt that should have been, I was kind of surprised it wasn't in there to begin with, that, you know, that's a natural place for him. When Vader looks at the Emperor pumping bolts of lightning into Luke, you expect him to say something there.
Yeah, he is father. Right?
He's yelling father, and then Vader goes, no! First he goes, no. Then he goes, no, which has become Vader's most, you know, famous line in the trilogy, in all six of them now, is to go, no, and he picks up the Emperor and throws him in the pit. You know, if I had seen that in 83, I wouldn't have minded at all, you know, because there always thought to be something missing there, but I understand now why people are pissed, especially because at the end of Attack of the Sith, he's like going, no, Padme, oh. And I just think that should be Vader's go-to line for anything, you know. It's like, Lord Vader, we talked to the dry cleaner. Your cape won't be ready until Thursday. No! do you want to meet with the Ewok chief before you take over their planet? No! I don't know. Just whatever, you know. Just no for everything. It's just, but anyway. Actually, I was making a joke about that. And I said, well, what's next? Are they going to make the Ewoks blink? And I said that on Twitter, and somebody said, Paul, have you checked this out? And there's Wicket. He's blinking all the way through that scene with Princess Leia.
I can believe that. That's almost frightening.
Again, that was something I thought should be there from the very beginning. You know, I remember I was working at I started working at Lucasfilm about a year after that. And I remember when I saw the movie, you know, they can do everything, but why can't they just, shouldn't the Ewoks blink? They look like these sort of dead-eyed hamsters now. Can't you make a mechanism that makes one or two of them blink or open their mouths a little
that's
bit?
That's the thing, that like the CG additions of the blinking almost look too good. Like it would have probably been better if it was built into the animatronic, I feel.
Well, yeah, it's sort of like that if the creatures' faces were built for blinking to begin with,
yeah,
they'd look like slightly different creatures. But I don't know. You know, it's just, it's one of those weird things. So, as you know, George just, I think he just treats these like a work in progress. So at some point I will break down. I will buy, you know, the DVD set. But you know what? Those movies are so fresh in my head ever since I saw them that I just, you know, really don't need to see them again for a while. Just That Random says, is there any way you can get another channel to produce Tower Prep? Kind of went over this last week.
Last episode.
Yeah, you know, Cartoon Network's not selling it. They're not selling it right now, and no other network wants it. No other network really has seen it. You know, so if I don't think Disney has any compelling reason to pick it up. Nickelodeon bought a show just like it. And there's really no place to take it on primetime, not on the major networks, because if you look at what's on ABC, CBS, and even Fox, they're not really doing kid-centric shows. No. There are a lot of kids in shows. I watched that show Terra Nova last night, and there are a lot of kids running around in it, but it's not really about kids. If they saw this, the perception from another network would be like, well, the ratings didn't do very well for Cartoon Network. Why would we want to take a show that wasn't successful there? What do we see in this? And more importantly, it has almost no public recognition other than a handful of very devoted fans, for which I'm eternally grateful. But, you know, if another network saw it, it's like, yeah, why buy it? We'll just do our own, you know? Yeah. So, you know, that's why that's not going to happen. Or I just think it's unlikely. If Tower Prep, you know, 5 years from now, Tower Prep does become a huge cult thing and Cartoon Network is forced at some point to reshow it, or you know, journalists start writing about it or kids start protesting and suddenly it gets more notice outside of that small handful of fans. Because right now there's virtually no perception of the show other than it, you know, at all. No one's, you know, I asked Cartoon Network people, no one came up to the booth at Comic-Con. No one said anything about it. Nobody raised a hand during any of the Cartoon Network presentations and said, when are you putting Tower Prep back on the air? It's been the same at every other convention. I mean, I know there are fans out there, but I don't think they're the Comic-Con crowd. No one's, you know, so Cartoon, or at least that's what they told me. So I really don't think that, you know, there's very little perception of it. Like I said last week, they yanked us before we got that, you know, cult following. So let's see. My DJ Crow says, what must us Floridians do to get you to come to MegaCon this coming February? You know, other than San Diego Comic-Con, which I kind of do or kind of have to do for work purposes, I've kind of sworn off conventions, and I'm sorry about that. But, you know, I'm working nonstop, and I can only focus on the work when I'm home. I'm not really one of those writers who can take the work with me. So I just really, you know, just can't do it. So I've gotten out of doing comic convention appearances and store appearances. Store appearances are sort of another reason, but Comic-Con appearances, I'm not a Comic-Con guy. I like going to the San Diego Con because I've always gone, you know, because that's like the one, and maybe WonderCon if I'm going up to visit family during that time of the year. But it's just, I went through a period where I just had sort of an emotional falling out with going to conventions, and I just realized it, you know, really wasn't for me. And more importantly, I don't want to be the guy who's always late on his assignments because I'm going off to Comic Cons. As much as I would like to, and I, you know, love Florida, and you know, I never say never. Maybe it'll happen. Maybe sooner than later. Who knows? Let's see what else we have here. Venom Melendez says, what can we expect from the Ultimate Spider-Man cartoon? You can expect me not to say much about it because we have some major announcements coming on that pretty soon, and I don't want to spoil any surprises. Okay, let's see. Adam Stabelli says, what do you think of DC's The New 52? You know, I haven't read much of it. I read a few. I like Batgirl. I like Justice League. Little light on story. It was more like a Brave and Bold, but you know, give it a few issues, I'm sure it'll perk up. Sure, look nice. And actually, it was, you know, good Batman Green Lantern stuff, but it was pretty much Batman Green Lantern.
Yeah.
I was sort of hoping in the first one it would have been great to have read a really tight, contained, 20 page team story, but they're building to something big, I think. So that's cool. Let's see, what did I read? Batgirl, Justice League. Detective was pretty good. Batman was pretty good. I really blipped through Animal Man quickly on the plane. I have to go back and reread it again.
I personally enjoyed Animal Man quite a bit.
Yeah, it looked really interesting. I just didn't have a chance to really give it a lot of attention. What else did I read? There's some other stuff that's out there. Suicide Squad, to check out the new Harley. And, you know, it's fine. She seems like old Harley to me. What else? What else did I read? Gosh, I thought I read something else. Detective was good. Certainly set up some interesting things happening with the Joker. I'd love to see how they pull that off. I mean, he pulled it off. And let's see. So I guess I don't know. I've missed a lot of them. So I've just picked up a few here and there. And so from what I read, they've seemed pretty good. FS Mazuka writes, "Why do people ask for cheese on their egg white omelets?" That's the eternal riddle, isn't it? I mean, that's like why people eat cupcakes and wash them down with a Diet Coke. I think they figure, you know, well, I'm cutting out the fat in one way so I can indulge in another. But really, like, I have seen people eat, like, big old cheeseburgers and pizza and wash it down with Diet Coke, and I'm going like, dude, you know, you're at the sixth level of hell already. Don't you want to try for the seventh? You know, just have a good old Coke loaded with good old corn syrup and... But I think they do feel in some way it cancels out in some way. Like, you know, the Diet Coke will somehow absolve them of the fat of what else they're eating.
I would just do it for the irony.
Yeah. I mean, I don't think FS really wanted an answer to the question, but I think it's a funny question. So let's see. Philip Matez writes, "What property would you like to turn into an animated show movie? Harry Potter, Buffy, Law and Order?" Gosh, I don't know.
Buffy was an animated show, wasn't it?
Yeah, Jeff Loeb worked on that. He did do some work on developing a Buffy series.
And then he did one of the issues of season 8 as the animated series.
Right, right. I don't think they were able to get it very far. I think, you know, there's like a great, you know, sort of kid appeal there, but I also think they were doing vampires too realistic. I mean, you have to kill them, even if... Now, in Buffy, they would stake them and they'd kind of dissolve, right?
Turn into dust.
They turn to dust. I don't know for sure. I might have to ask Jeff about this someday, but I think I remember hearing, and I don't know if they've resolved this problem, that there was a problem with the perception of just killing the vampires and everything. You can do vampires in animation as long as they're not vampires. Yeah. They can be vampires. They can have like little Dracula sounding names and they can be all cool and goth and everything, but they can't suck blood and you can't kill them because you're actually killing a humanoid thing. I mean, you know, it's like, there's this thing our niece loves, which is, what is it? Monster High or the girly thing. It looks like a kind of like reimagined dumbed down version of the Little Dead Girl dolls or something, but this is more like cleaned up and pretty. And it's like angst-ridden girls going to high school, monster girls. Yeah. It's like, yeah, there's one Draculina, you know, but and other than that, having sharp teeth, and then there's another one who's like a werewolf girl and an abominable snowman girl and a creature girl and everything. You can't really be monsters. You know, it can look like Monsterland, but it's about as threatening as the Munsters. And there's no actual horror. So I think, yeah, that's what kept Buffy from being, because I think they wanted to play it straight. They wanted to make it, you know, really moody like the TV show or Batman or a bunch of other, you know, kind of more moody type shows. But also I think it may have skewed just too old, you know, because I think they wanted to do them as teenagers and that already is too old for what most executives think a kid wants to see. Kids want to see like babies running around doing stuff like that. If you're doing baby Dracula, they'd buy that. Let's see. And so I don't know. I really don't want to work on other people's properties. I want to create my own stuff. So other than reviving a few classic characters here and there, which I may or may not be doing, who started off as cartoon characters, I just sort of want to take some more of my original ideas and do some original shows. Let's see. RS3 feed says, "What's a podcast?" Okay, you're in the wrong place. Let's see. Let's see. Kariza 92 says, "Are we getting a new season of Tower Prep? I love the first season." Well, we're, you know, doing what we can. Let's see. I've Lost My Hands says, have you ever pulled the I Created Batman, the animated series card to get out of a tight spot? like what?
Yeah. Like, who's that going to work on?
I'm going to kill you. Well, I created Batman, the animated series. Oh, well, no, I'm not going to kill you. I'm just going to rough you up a bit. I love that show. No, not really. I mean, I can't think of anything. Certainly doesn't work in restaurants. I'm sorry, sir. It'll be a 40-minute wait for a table. Oh, well, you know, of course, I created Batman, the animated series. Uh-huh. 60-minute wait for a table.
Yeah.
It's like, no, that doesn't carry any weight anywhere. I've never used it to, like, get, you know, throw my weight around or anything or impress people because I, you know, it's anybody who does that, you know, who starts, you know, who has to announce their presence by reading off their resume is kind of a tiresome person. In fact, one of the best stories I've heard about that happened, I guess, about 2 or 3 years ago. Bob Dylan was doing a concert someplace. I think it was in New Jersey. And the band had all set up, and there were a few hours until showtime, so he just decided to take a walk around and just stroll through a neighborhood. And as he's out taking a walk, a couple of cops stop him, and they say, excuse me, sir, can we see some ID? Because, you know, Bob's, you know, outside of his milieu, you know, outside of the concert stage or, you know, the recording studio or the Abernathy building where he does Theme Time Radio Hour, he has a bit of a, he could be perceived as having a bit of a scruffy look to him. So,
like every other dirty hippie.
Well, yeah, like, you know, he's a rock and roller. So, you know, he's a musician. So musicians, you know, sometimes they, you know, they don't walk around in a suit and tie. So the police call him over and they say, excuse me, sir, what's your name? And he goes, Bob Dylan. And he goes, uh-huh. Do you have any ID? And he didn't have any ID on him. And he goes, will you come with us to the station? It's like, and Bob said, okay. And he got in the car and he went to the police station with him. And the police officer, I think, was pretty young in his 20s, and he just didn't know who Bob Dylan was. You know,
wow.
If you don't listen to the music at some point, you don't know who he is.
Yeah.
And, but I think Bob was more amused than anything else that he just went down to the police station. And when the cops walked in with him, I'm sure some cops there went, oh my God, it's Bob Dylan. What's he doing here? And they just arrested him because they thought he was a vagrant. But, you know, from the sound of it, it didn't sound like Bob stood there and said, I'm Bob Dylan and I'm famous and I've done all these records and, you know, I'm playing at the rock and roll show down the street. It's like, oh, I'll get in the car.
Yeah, sure, why not?
It's like, well, sure, I'll be a sport. I mean, so as far as whipping out Batman the Animated Series, you know, I never have, but I don't need to because there are a lot of people who saw the show and like it. So sometimes somebody will see my name or, you know, like I'll pay for something with a credit card and they'll recognize the name and you know.
If they know you, they know the work. And if they know the work, they most likely know you.
Yeah, yeah. One time I was at F.A.O. Schwartz in New York and I bought a stuffed animal and I paid for it with a credit card and they were going to ship it home and I left the store and then I realized I'd left the card at F.A.O. Schwartz and I walked back and went in and the person who had waited on me didn't say anything at the time, but when he realized I had gone away without the card, he kept it for me. So he said, you're the animator, right? And I said, yeah. And he goes, well, I really like your work. And I said, oh, thank you very much. So nice. I got some excellent service there. Interestingly enough, I did not get the stuffed animal because they shipped it to the wrong address or got lost in the mail or something. I did get a replacement at some point of the animal, but it was not at that time. For whatever reason, the story was not that happy an ending. But, you know, sometimes that'll happen. You know, and the reverse has happened also. I went into a comic book store once, very high-toned place, and, you know, somewhere where unless you're somebody facially recognized, unless you're somebody visually known to the person behind the counter, like a celebrity, they don't really take any notice of you.
And if you're not Patton Oswalt, they don't notice you.
Yeah, Patton Oswalt, Sarah Silverman. Yeah. And those
comic book nerds.
Yeah, you know, a handful of others. So I went into this one place and I didn't have any cash with me. And I don't go to the store. Well, I don't go anymore at all to this place. And I bought some books. They had a book there that I couldn't find at the other comic book store, like a hardcover collection. And I paid for my credit card. And the guy took the card and he looked at it. He looked at my name and he looked at me and he went like, And just like, oh, thanks.
Okay.
Asshole.
Yeah.
Maybe I don't need that Kangaroo collection.
Yeah.
As much as I thought I did, you know.
Wow. That's
but
weird.
It was like, you know. So I took my collected Kangaroo and walked out in shame past all the little shelves marked with the good writers, like the Grant Morrison section, the Alan Moore section, the Neil Gaiman section. And then, you know, I looked up and there's, you know, one little lonely copy of Mad Love on a shelf just marked Others.
Oh, I'm sure that's not true, but
no, it's not.
It feels that way sometimes, I know.
It's not true. None of it's true, except the sneer. I mean, at that point,
yeah.
Okay, I don't need to come in here. Not even, I can order Kangaroo online.
Yeah.
I don't need this. So anyway, that was the, let's see. Patala says, Paul Dean, yeah, would you ever do more Batman and Zatanna stuff? Probably not. Not in the near future. Actually, I do have a Batman story that's coming out at some point in Batman Black and White, and then there's the Zatanna Black Canary graphic novel that's coming out next year. So yeah, I've got stuff coming out, but I'm not currently doing anything for DC Comics, so probably not with those characters anytime soon. And also, those characters are sort of Batman, not so much, but Zatanna and a few others are undergoing changes from what the book was that I was writing. So, Agent of S.H.I.E.L.D. says, would you ever consider writing a Warner Premiere movie of Gotham Central with Bruce Timm directing? Again, I'm not working for those guys anymore, so doubtful. Let's see. Emma Maria 11. When will we know if there's going to be a season 2 of Tower Prep? You know what? I've actually was talking to our executive producer, Bill O'Dowd, the other day. Actually, I wasn't speaking to him. He's in Europe. But when he comes back from Europe, hopefully I'll get an update on what that is. There are a lot of people working very hard to get Tower Prep back on for a season 2. So hopefully in a few weeks I'll have a report on that. Let's see. And
I got a quick question.
Yes.
Well, obviously, I know you, so I notice your name a lot at places, whether it's a book I read, like the book that Incredibles was supposedly based on, where you have the blurb on the back.
Oh, Super Folks?
Super Folks, that was it.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, you have a blurb on that, and also I was reading Sergio Argonis'
Bunnies sure.
recently with Mark Evanier and you and a few other people doing mm-hmm. some blurbs and that. How do you get asked to do things like that, doing like comments on a book and, you know, giving... You know, a little blurb.
You know, people ask me if I'll do it, and I don't do every one I'm offered. There are sometimes people ask me for a blurb on a comic I either didn't read or don't enjoy or just don't feel like I contribute anything to. But, you know, every once in a while I feel like if it's appropriate, then I'll do something. You know, like Brian Bendis asked me to write an introduction for one of his books, and I really, really loved the comic, and I thought it was, you know, really terrific stuff, so I was honored that he asked me. A few people have asked me here and there to contribute things. I wrote an introduction to a Usagi Yojimbo collection. I love Usagi Yojimbo. Stan Sakai is just... He's one of those guys amazing. Who's so good, I don't think he gets...
And been doing it for years,
a too. Fraction of the credit he deserves. Yeah. That he is such a nice guy. And this book is so wonderful, and the drawing is so tremendous that I was just, I'm floored, you know, when people ask me to write an introduction for something I really love. A lot of people ask me, but, you know, like I said, if I don't feel like I can bring anything to it or I just am unfamiliar with the work, I won't do it. You know, usually I luck out.
That was you in the bowling shirt that Sergio drew in that issue of Funnies, right?
Which issue?
I think it was the second issue. At the very beginning, he talks about all the friends he had writing in the email column because he hasn't had letters yet.
I haven't seen it.
Oh, really?
Oh, where is it?
He draws a picture of Mark Evanier, and I think you in a bowling shirt, it looked like.
Oh, bowling shirt. What are the odds?
Yeah, that's how I recognized you.
Gosh. Oh, that's great. I show up a lot. I guess that's by design, though, because a few years ago, I went out and I bought a black shirt with a green panel on the front,
mm-hmm.
and I bought about six of them, and I said that is going to be the look, just like Kevin Smith had sort of like the black shorts and the T-shirt and the coat that he was wearing at that time. That became
and
his
now
defining.
Now it's more a hockey jersey.
Now
look.
It's the hockey jersey with the FU on the front or
37.
Something like that. Yeah, that became the look. But I came up with this very cartoony look. Mm-hmm. And that's the look that's on the website, which is also the panel shirt, although I changed the color. I actually outgrew all my old black and green panel shirts. I got so fat, ashamed myself. So I had to drop that look for a while. But I'm going down.
Well,
yeah.
Looking forward to those shirts coming back.
Yeah, me too. Should be another 6 years. Anyway.
You're doing great. I got to say, you look fantastic.
30 pounds in 2 months.
Oh, wow. Congratulations.
Keep going. Let's see. But yeah, actually, I looked at Bill Morrison drew me like that in, and the Bongo guys drew me like that in one of the Simpson books. The little hardcover Simpson books.
Yeah.
There's comic book guy's guide to popular culture, of course. There's a shot of me signing autographs at a table, and I'm kind of going like, because he's headed over to my table with a huge stack of books to sign. And you can tell it's me because I'm wearing that same shirt, and there's also a huge Bill Morrison drawing of Polly the Witch behind me.
Really
cute. And wearing her trademark little black and orange striped t-shirt.
Very nice.
So yeah, I show up in a few things, and caricatures and stuff like that. I'll have to get that. Sergio and Mark actually did a really terrific Jingle Bell story. Like a second or third year I was doing Jingle Bell. It was a really great story where she was like, became an agent for, she wanted to help Santa make more collections, like Sidewalk Santas, make more money. So she went out and she hired, she goes, well, what sells better than sex? So she went out and bought a bunch of real cute, she didn't buy anybody. She went out and hired a bunch of really cute model type girls to wear sexy Santa costumes and ring bells for donations. And it worked for about an hour because the girls were so attractive that they were all snapped up by talent agents. And so she had to go out on Christmas Eve and ring the Salvation Army bell herself. That was pretty good.
Funny. Yeah, those issues of Funnies are really well done. I like the autobiography elements in them.
Yeah. You know, I'm just aching to do a book like that myself. That would
imagine.
Be like the next book I would love to do. And I've actually talked to some people about doing something that's similar. And I think it would be a good chance for me to do personal stories, but also to showcase characters like Jingle Bell and Ida Red and the Mutant Texas characters and a few others that, you know, really are kind of like this extended universe and also some new characters too. And I'm talking to a publisher very seriously about it. It's just, we're actually kind of looking at the Sergio book to see how that's doing. I think the numbers have been pretty strong for
a
book like that.
Fantastic.
And as long as it makes financial sense, I think we'll do it. Let's see. AR Owns You says, does magician wife equal magic sex? Oh, you shall never know. Trungle Fever, have you learned any magic from your wife? Maybe those two questions should go together. Anyway, okay. Let's see. AR Owns You says, why do you spell so badly? Well, okay. I guess that's because they put questions instead of questions. Okay.
Oh, they haven't learned our little theme of questions on the Twitter.
I don't know. Maybe you read a story of mine where I was just misspelling things all the way through it.
So. Well, then I blame the editor.
I blame myself for doing a terrible job. But let's see. I guess that's it.
I got a Gray Matters splat on Twitter's Ray Arashi feed. What kind of script is easier to write, TV, comic, or video game? I think you went through this before, but a quick review.
I don't know. They're all hard.
Yeah.
I don't know. You know, I tend, when I write a movie script, I tend to put a lot of much more description than I need to in it because I think I've been used to writing animation so long where you describe stuff and, and I don't think I describe enough in my comics sometimes. So, gosh, I guess animation is probably the easiest. I mean, once I'm up and running, I can buzz through that in like no time. I went to London in June and I had a big assignment with me. It was for an animated feature. And even though I was supposed to be taking that week off to go to a museum with my sister and work with her on an animation project that she's bringing over to her museum, and take the rest of the week off and just enjoy myself, I sat in the hotel room and just wrote the script for 4 days straight without a break. And partially that was because I wanted to get it done, you know, right then and there and not delay and not have it, you know, come in late. And also I was just having a lot of fun with it.
Yeah.
And it's like, I'm here. I know it's London. Yeah, it's great. It's spring in London and it's beautiful. And I could be out at a museum or walking around or going down and getting on the big, you know, the Ferris wheel thingy. But I'm just having too much fun writing this. And I just sat in the room and I just pulled some all-nighters just writing the thing and just giggling and having a good time. And, you know, then I got it in. But it was just easy for me to do once I was in the rhythm of it. Comics are hard, you know, because you have to just describe even more than in animation. And then if you're writing for features, you're not supposed to write any description at all. I mean, you know, a lot of that is the call of the director. And yet I find myself doing it anyway, which pisses off the director. It pisses off the directors in animation too. Some of them, they just hate getting description. You know, it's like, you know, they hate getting scripts. Some of them, they just like saying, why do we even need a script? Cartoonist can come up with it all himself. It's like, yeah, sure. For maybe 7 minutes. And after that, I've seen a lot of, you know, really good directors kind of like, you know, kind of get lost. They wouldn't say that, but there you go. I don't know, but I try and really keep the description at a minimum. And when I write a live feature, same with the video games. Video games are a lot like features too. Surprisingly, more like features. But video games are probably the hardest because of the intensity of the work. I mean, you have to write every little detail, or you have to give some indication of what's happening.
Yeah, and unlike a cartoon or movie, it's hours long technically.
Yeah, it's hours long, and it's hours in years sometimes of the writing process because you are writing literally everything that happens on screen and everything the character says.
Yeah.
And I know I've talked about this before, but if you write, you know, something like one of the Arkham games, you have Batman going through these different actions, and then you have to write a different response for every character he meets, and then you have to, you know, come up with dialogue for him to say. In some cases, the dialogue's kind of repetitive because what he's doing is pretty much the same, but with slight variations. So you have to constantly go back over what you've written so you keep it fresh. It's like you're writing every scene a number of different times. And then if you've got a game where a different character, you can use a different character in that scenario and play as that different character, you have to go back and rewrite that scene for that different character. So it's like you're writing a massive movie except instead of the leading man's part, you're now writing it from the point of the best friend who suddenly you're putting him in that part, and you're, you know, it's just constantly writing and rewriting. And that's why a lot of these video games take like 2 or 3 years to make.
Yeah, I can't imagine doing something like those RPGs where it's role-playing games and you can talk to anyone, say anything, have a choice of what you say, have a choice of whether it's good or evil, so the whole game changes. That must be so many different types of scripts.
I don't even know what that is.
The role-playing games like Fallout or Mass Effect, where you get to be a person, and when you talk to somebody, you have a choice of whether it's doing something good or bad.
Is that where you're like talking to somebody online and you're playing with somebody online?
No, these are all pre-scripted.
Oh, okay. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. I know what that is.
And then you can choose dialogue. Like Star Wars Knights of the Old Republic, you can choose dialogue trees.
Right.
And they all go off in different tangents. I can't imagine how much more writing that would be.
I guess what I was referring to was some of the... Aren't there other games that you play online with different people where you're all different?
MMORPGs.
Yeah, that's right.
Multiplayer ones.
Yeah, Tony Cervoni was telling me about I first found out about those like 8 years ago because Tony Cervoni, one of the directors at Warner's, was playing a lot of those games, and we actually wrote an episode of Duck Dodgers where he was in a role. What do you call it?
Massive multi online role playing game MMORPG.
That was actually the title of the episode, and I could never keep all those initials straight. And I actually went online, you know, because he said we're going to do this episode where Dodgers is playing this role playing game, and I was going like, what? You know, walk me through this. So he would like show me how the game played, and you know, it was like a learning experience because I had to learn how to play the game in order to write the cartoon.
Yeah.
And basically we just made it another, you know, silly adventure. It was more like a parody of Lord of the Rings or something. And, but
Tony, who had infinite patience, told me how the game, what the game was, and how it was played, and you're this guy and you're that guy. I used to play Dungeons and Dragons, you know, a long time ago, and that was before, you know, and this was sort of like Dungeons and Dragons, but on a computer.
Yeah, exactly.
One of the, here, I'll go off on a tangent, tell this little story of from my past, but years ago, God, I don't even know how many years ago, 30 years, is that possible? Oh, God, no, 28 years, a long time ago. I'm very good friends with a guy named Flint Dilley, really terrific writer and terrific guy and a game designer and everything. He's a man of many incredible talents. And he worked very closely with Gary Gygax, who created Dungeons and Dragons. And back in the early 80s, Gary had bought a big mansion in Hollywood, up in the Hollywood Hills. It was King Vidor's old estate. And it was huge, and it had a private stable on it, you know, for horses. But it had been turned into, like, a workspace. And Gary had a huge Dungeons & Dragons set up there, a huge layout where you could move, you know, like, soldiers and forces around and everything, and it was like you could play on this massive scale, rolling the dice, and then you'd move these army guys around, you know, like little troopers and stuff like that, because you could actually play the game not on paper, but with actual, you know, figures that you would move around on this giant it was almost like a train landscape, you know, when you make a train layout, you know.
Oh yeah,
it was like that, except there was no train on it. And I would go up there, and sometimes those games would go for days. I remember, you know, going up with pizza, you know, and we'd all share pizza, and they'd been working on the game for literally like 48 hours or something, just playing the game and everything. And it was actually pretty cool. It was a very interesting crowd of people in and out of the mansion in those years. And there's some wacky memories. But even then, you know, I'm kind of good. I'm better with a game that has a finite beginning and ending, like Monopoly. Even Monopoly goes on too long.
Exactly. So, it's like, I give up. Here, take my houses. You play on.
I don't think I've actually finished a game of Monopoly. There are some games I like a lot, you know, some board games I like a lot, but some go on way too far for me. And then one of those was Dungeons and Dragons, you know. It's like, we're moving the battle guy here, and this guy is happening this, and I got this spell point. When does the dragon actually show up? Does the dragon show up? Does he kill people? Can I be the dragon? Can I move the dragon like a puppet, you know, and have it eat people? And that never happened. Yeah. And but it was fascinating to watch. I just, for whatever reason, never got wrapped up in the thrill of the game. But,
yeah, I've only played it once myself. Some friends invited me to play, and for some reason, we had the ability to go and play in my school's theater auditorium. So it was just late at night, and, you know, barely any lights on in the auditorium. We played Dungeons and Dragons.
Were there people in costume?
No. There should have been, though.
Do people actually dress up in costume to play Dungeons and Dragons?
I'm sure they do, don't they?
I guess. like romp around with swords and shields.
But then wouldn't
stuff?
That? I mean, once you start walking around with the costumes, that's LARP, right? The live action role playing game.
It has a name?
Oh, LARPing, yes. LARPing? You haven't seen them at con? They walk around and actually pretend they're in their own Lord of the Rings world?
Really?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. It's a real thing.
LARPing.
LARPing. Look it up.
Well, is that like going to the Renaissance Fair?
Sort of, but you're actually playing Dungeons and Dragons.
Oh, I see. Okay.
Yeah.
And
just acting it out.
You're acting it out. Okay.
Yeah.
Well, don't you get hurt? Like
you have
like
foam swords, I think.
Foam?
Yeah. I think they in the movie Role Models.
I remember. Yeah,
that's the big plot point of that.
Yeah, they actually did. There was like a joust or something. They met at Denny's to plot out their strategy or something. That was pretty funny. I don't know. I don't know. I'm not. See, my version of that is watching the Lions on Sunday afternoon. You know, I'm watching guys beat each other up and getting emotionally invested in the game. And you know, the Lions have won 3 straight, you know, and I'm very happy about that. I mean, and that's just in
And you're
that doesn't even count the preseason. They won all their preseason games too.
You know, you're painting yourself the Lions colors, and you know you're getting
I'm
really.
I'm not
into
doing
it
that. I'm not doing that. But I mean, you know, that's as much to me. That's as interesting as going to a joust as it would be for some. I just feel like, well, this is actual conflict. You know, you can do that. The other stuff is fine. I mean, that's great. You know, if you want to do that, I mean, I'm not. I'm just.
No, we're not.
I'm more mystified.
We're not criticizing.
By
we're just
the process.
Fascinated.
Yeah. than that, you know, because I know there are people who do get all dressed up, and some of those costumes are great. I've seen people in actual armor. Going around.
Some of them look amazing. That's for sure. The people who work at Renaissance Fair as well, who like make their own chain mail for those things. Yeah.
I mean, Flint Dilly. I mean, to mention him again, he actually had an actual suit of armor in his house, and I think it might actually be.
Wow.
From his family's armor, you know, that's wow. It's great if you have a family that goes all the way back that you have armor connected with it. I don't know, you know, it's sort of and that stuff's fine. I just don't have it in me to go slinging a sword around like Conan the Barbarian. I mean, I guess that's one of the ones you can do. You could like tie a little furry throw rug around yourself and go off and act like Conan, I suppose, right?
Yeah, I suppose so. Yeah,
I wouldn't be doing that.
I'd rather just make a movie or something.
Yeah. If you're going to put that much effort
put a camera in front of you. Yeah.
Another of those guys who dress up, guys and girls, I expect, who dress up like weasels and skunks. And
yeah, the furries are.
Furries, yeah.
Yeah, that's a little different, though. I think that's more.
They don't hit each other with swords?
No, they hit each other with other things shaped like swords.
I think I know what those things are.
Yeah, no, that's a different line.
I just saw a cartoon online that John Chris Felucci did about furries.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, he took it easy on him.
I'm sure.
I mean, it was pretty brutal, but he did kind of take... Well, I don't know.
Whenever I hear about furries, I think of that old Monty Python bit where they're talking about dressing up as mice.
As mice,
hanging out as mice.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which I think was analogous to being gay at that time, you know?
Yeah,
sort of
yeah.
Like, it's definitely like a guy going to his first gay party.
Yeah.
But they couldn't say gay, so...
Graham
like,
must have wrote it.
Yeah, he must have. That's a great one. That made me laugh really hard when I saw that when I was
awesome.
A kid. Because
like, John Cleese starting to twitch and flick his nose like a mouse.
Yeah. Because I had some relatives who were gay, and I'd known about it since I was able to understand what that was.
Mm-hmm.
And then I kind of wondered, why do you never really see, other than just, you know, outrageous stereotypes, here we are back with Snagglepuss again. You never... I'm sorry,
Heavens
Snagglepuss.
Heavens to Murgatroyd.
Heavens to Murgatroyd, yeah. You never really saw gay people on TV. And then when I
or
saw
the Great Kazoo.
The Great, well, you know, of course, they are a couple now.
Yeah, according to Saturday Night Live.
That's a perfect couple, yeah. And I always thought it was really, you know, like you never saw gay people on TV. And then when I saw the Mouse Men thing, I was going like, oh, I guess I can't really say it, but they're kind of saying it. So I thought that was a clever way to kind of say it. But I guess that's about it. Let's see. Any more questions or anything like that?
No, yeah, that's it.
I got a question. What happened to Hong Kong Phooey?
What happened to Hong Kong Phooey?
Yeah.
Nobody remembers
him.
Yeah, that's kind of true. Scatman Crothers did a great job with that.
I love Hong Kong Phooey.
Yeah.
I love Hong Kong Phooey because he actually sounded like a black guy.
Yeah.
And they didn't have to caricature him physically in any way.
Yeah, not at all.
But he just sounded really cool, you know? And you know, he was kind of like the even more down-home Huckleberry Hound because he sort of had that same attitude and everything. They released the entire episode on DVD.
That was one of the first Hanna-Barbera releases, I think.
Yeah. And a good friend of ours, Alex Zam, is now making a Hong Kong Phooey feature. So it's going to be like Yogi Bear, a mixture of live action and animation.
Well, let's hope it's not like Yogi Bear. And
well, Alex is a good filmmaker. This will be pretty good. Actually, I'm dying to go to the shoot. I know he's just been very busy with it.
Honestly, it's got to be fantastic.
Yeah, I was actually jealous. Awesome. You know, it's like you're writing and directing Hong Kong Phooey.
Yeah.
I don't like Hong Kong.
That's
going to
become the biggest kids thing in the world.
I would have liked a shot at that.
Yeah.
That would have been awesome. But, you know, I'm happy for him, and it's going to be a terrific film. He did the Beverly Hills Chihuahuas, a couple of those movies, the second one of those. Well, that's it for the questions, and actually that's all the time we have for this week. join us again next week. Misty will be back, and so will Deuce. He is finishing up his doggy training, so I expect there'll be lots of stories about that. So stop on by next week. This is Paul saying so long for now.
This has been another episode of Radio Rashi. If you've enjoyed this episode, let everyone know by leaving a review in the iTunes Store. It's a great way to help others find us. You can also leave comments on RadioRashi.com, Facebook.com/RadioRashi, or follow us on Twitter at Radio Rashi or at Paul_Dini to leave us questions. Thanks for listening, and tell your friends.
Through the night and the day, though my eyes grow weary and my head turns gray, and sometimes I think, maybe God's gone away, forgetting the promise that we heard him say. And we're lost out here in the stars, little stars, big stars, floating through the night.
I have trouble with that. No. Thank you. Goodbye.